is WABF. And it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, who is back filling in for the program, brought to you today by an anonymous sponsor. And now we welcome you, Dr. Lou, via telephone. Good morning, Dr. Lou.
Good morning to you, Lori. That was some song that was there. What was it? Roll out the band, old man.
Roll over Beethoven.
Roll over Beethoven. Couldn't quite catch it. Well, listen, thanks for the introduction. I'm certainly glad to be back, and we'll be doing this, for the rest of the month, and then we'll see where we go with this. But, you know, today, you know, the name of the show is the Conservative Watchdog News Review. Well, we sure have a lot of news to review, that's for sure. And I want to get into it quickly because I know in half an hour it'll go fast. So first things first, I want to talk about Biden's campaign speech. Okay, this wasn't a State of the Union speech. It was a campaign speech, okay? And we need to kind of dig into it and see exactly why it was so polarizing and why it was so unpresidential in terms of State of the Union speeches go. Next, I want to talk about this whole question of the border again, all right? There's major issues with it, and it's particularly revolving around Texas. I mentioned this last week, but there's some new developments there that we need to kind of talk about. Next, I want to talk about Trump's Super Tuesday victory. I mean, pretty startling. And, of course, Nikki Haley drops out, so we'll see how all of this plays out. I do want to mention, again, the immunity case that's going to be held by heard by the Supreme Court. I think it's April 25th or April 26th. Again, I mentioned it last week, but again, more developments on that I want to talk about. Last two things I want to talk about. One of them is Katie Britt's incredibly good post-analysis of Biden's speech. Now, understand this. Common sense, when we were there in 2022, we supported Mo Brooks and did not want Katie Britt. But I have to say, she hit a home run last night. We want to talk a little bit about that. Lastly, I want to get into, if I have time, your local issue about the school board race that Barry Hosier lost, I think 43% to 56% to Andrea Lindsay. We need to understand why this is an important race. And unfortunately, the candidate that Common Sense Baldwin County folks supported did not win. But that doesn't mean the issues have not gone away. They're there, and we need to follow up on these things. All right, so first things first, and I forgot to do my timer here, so I don't overrun and get on Lori's bad side. Okay. All right. Now, Lori, the State of the Union. I know that different analysts had different things to say about it, as always. But I do think that most of the analysts that I listened to thought that this was just over the top in terms of partisanship and in no way an attempt to try to unify the country. Okay? All right. Having said that, why would you expect anything different from Biden? I mean, look what he has done to disunify the country, despite running as a unifier, you know, in 2020. I mean, he may have sat in the basement and said all these good things, but then as soon as he took over, look what he's done. And then questions about January 6th are central to everything that he has voted in terms of disunifying this country, you know, insurrection. And the argument that he made in the summer of 21, standing in Philadelphia, you know, this whole thing is a threat to democracy. Well, that theme has been promoted for the last 2 years after his Philadelphia speech. So, for us to think that anything was going to change with him, I think that it made no sense. the other part of that, that what was he supposed to talk about? I mean, most polls are showing that 72% of the people think we're on the wrong track. Even the Democrats think like that. So for him to get into a, quote, state of the union based on a realistic assessment of what the state of the union really is wasn't going to happen. Instead, we got the usual laundry list of pseudo-accomplishments and usual Bernie Sanders grab bag of, you know, those kinds of issues that, that inflame the far-left Democrat base, okay? So let's just kind of examine some of these things that that the speech was about and kind of look into this from the standpoint of, well, what did Biden really have to accomplish here in order to, you know, solidify his own party, number one, and number two, show people that he could actually give a speech. So this whole question, I think, of his age and infirmity and all the rest of it was a major issue that he had to deal with. And I think that just, if, you know, as you watched it, as I watched it, I mean, I thought that he certainly gave a good speech in terms of what he had to be able to do. He didn't stumble bumble too much. Had a couple of gaffes. He called Lincoln Riley, that sort of thing. But, you know, in terms of usual Biden mumble jumble, he really didn't stumble too much. So, and then he was very feisty. I would say more than feisty. I mean, this is typical old Joe Biden, the street fighter, coming out of Scranton, Mr. Middle Class, all of that usual crap that just defines. So that's who he was the other night, you know. But again, he had to do something to overcome this perception that he can't handle the job because he's too old and too infirm. So as far as that goes, he did fine with it, okay? I guess showing he's alive well, you know, and could deliver it, I mean, that's basically what he did do, okay? So that doesn't mean, in my view, that age is still not an issue. But there's certainly an advertisement running from one of the pro-Trump PACs that show all of these problems with his age. They may have, you know, released that too soon, given how well Biden did as far as answering the age infirmity question with his speech, okay? But the other thing that he had to do was to rally the left-wing progressive Bernie Sanders crowd. And to a certain degree, that's what the speech was about. And so he serves up the usual Democrat grab bag of promises and pseudo-accomplishments, okay? He's going to protect democracy. Well, I mean, you and I have talked about this. Everyone else has seen it. How do you argue you're protecting democracy when you're using the Department of Justice to persecute and prosecute your major opponent? I mean, this just doesn't make sense. You know, on the big picture scale, it's absurd to say that you're protecting democracy when you're actually destroying it. But this is what they do. You know, they're the ones that are the problem. They're the ones that steal elections. They're the ones that are using the law to prosecute people. So I would say that the fact that he even said that was a joke, and everyone on our side of the aisle certainly sees it that way, okay? And here's another one of these things that Democrats love to talk about. Stop the GOP from cutting Social Security. Well, I mean, no one's trying to do that. But so, I mean, these straw man arguments are part and parcel of what they do. And I think that it's easy to see through it. And this next one I want to point out to you, Laurie, is absolutely shameless, okay? It's this idea that we're going to make the rich pay their fair share. Guess what? I mean, statistically, the rich pay about 70% of all the taxes, okay? Number one. But number two, to talk about paying your fair share when your son is a tax thief, I mean, that takes a lot of whatever description you want to make to it, but it is absolutely ridiculous to talk about this. But nevertheless, this is what they have to do to get the base inflamed. So, I don't know. It's nuts, but here again, look what they do about corporate welfare, corporate taxes. The corporate tax that Trump cut was from 35% to 21%. And the whole idea was to make corporate taxes more competitive with the competitive world that the corporate world lives in. And that sparked the U.S. economy to a very large degree once those tax cuts went into effect. Same thing with the personal tax cuts that were passed when Trump came in. But of course, how does Biden take that? Oh, millions of dollars for the rich, and they don't pay their fair share. So, I mean, this is typical. This is what they do, and this is how they do it. So, I would suggest that as you really look carefully at this speech, it really is just boilerplate Democrat talking points that have no basis in the reality of what Biden is really dealing with, okay? Another issue that he really touches on is abortion. Now, 2022, that election, they used the abortion card and did quite well with women throughout the country, and it tamped down the big red wave that everyone expected to see because inflation and everything else was so bad, okay? But here again, this argument about blaming his predecessor, he used that term 13 times, according to the analysis that I've heard. I mean, I didn't count it while I was taking notes on the speech, but the point is that his predecessor is the one who set all this in motion because conservative Supreme Court justices did away with Roe versus Wade. So, again, he's got people in the audience up there who can point to who suffered because of, you know, Roe versus Wade being taken away, and these states are all passing these terrible, you know, anti-abortion laws that force women, like one woman who was there, to deal with having to go to another state to get what she wanted to do with the baby. Okay? So I would suggest that here again we get into this whole question about what is really going on with this question of abortion. The reality is it never should have been done at the level, the federal level. It needed to be with the states. The Supreme Court made the correct decision, and states are dealing with it accordingly. Okay? But then the Republicans are supposedly vulnerable on this, yet Trump seems to be taking a middle ground on it. If we're going to argue that abortion is the third rail for, you know, American women, then I think we have to be able to, you know, work through that through our states and deal with it. And the various states have different views on it, but that's kind of small d democracy. I mean, that's what we're supposed to be defending, and yet all they want to do is centralize power, demand, you know, that abortion not only is legal, but look what they will do in terms of defining how long you can have an abortion, to where it's at the point where the baby has born and you can still abort it, kill it. I mean, what is that? I mean, how do you defend democracy when you're not willing to defend the lives of the unborn or the newly born? It makes no sense, but nevertheless, that's what you're dealing with. Here's another thing that he did, which I find unconscionable, but nevertheless, he has the audacity to say that the world is safer now that they're in charge. The adults came back to power. Lori, you know how long we've been talking about all of these problems associated with Biden and his lack of foreign policy understanding and knowledge, and the degree to which he not only has been wrong on so many issues in the past, but Lori, where are we today based on his mistakes? I guess I'll have to repeat myself. I mean, this question about what took place with Ukraine, which he starts off his whole talk with Ukraine, you know, telling us that Putin won't be stopped unless we stop in Ukraine. Now, that's a point that I've talked about on this radio show since all of this started, okay? And my argument has been Putin needed to be stopped. There's no question about that. But the real issue is, how do you stop him? And what happened to American deterrence to show Putin, if you cross the line, you're going to pay a price? Okay, I'm repeating myself of what I said last week. I'm repeating myself what I said last year. I'm repeating myself what I said the year before. Okay? It's not hard to understand. Deterrence 101 means that your adversary believes that you will take steps which will harm the bad guy, and yet, Biden just squandered the deterrence that Trump had built up in terms of peace through strength, in terms of using sanctions to do what? To knock down our adversaries. Look at what Trump did with the Iranians. Put them on the floor with his sanctions so that they could not support their proxies. Again, you know, I hate to repeat myself, but sometimes it just has to be said again. Biden inherited a very good situation, not only domestically because the economy was coming back, blah, 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 but in terms of foreign affairs, look what he inherited. Iran was on its knees. It could not foment the proxies with the money that they always had. And so Russia is in the same boat because American energy had been unleashed. It drove the prices of oil down, and it hurt the Ruskies, as well as sanctioning the Russian pipeline to Germany. Okay, I'm going to sound like a broken record, but last week I said this, same thing. What did Biden do as soon as he came in? He lifts the sanctions off of the Russian pipeline. Then they may have blown it up, or who knows what happened with that, but nevertheless, lifts those sanctions, lifts the sanctions from the Iranians, who can now start selling oil, okay, gives them money back that had been, you know, held by the United States as a result of sanctions, gives them $6 billion for hostage takers, okay, free some hostages, and then moves in the direction of exactly the opposite of what Trump had done. And here again, get first things first, we're back to Obama and the nuclear deal, and that's all these people wanted to do was to get back to the nuke deal. And so they played that game again, and in so doing, they have created the monster of our adversaries being given a green light to do what the adversaries wanted to do, like supporting Hamas, supporting Hezbollah, supporting the Houthis, and they took the Houthis off the terror watch list. I mean, you see what's so frustrating? Listen to this crap last night about how important Ukraine is. And again, I don't disagree. It is important to a point. But when you completely eradicate the very basis for believing that Putin would think twice before going into Ukraine, you have to ask yourself, well, I can't say it, but what the you-know-what? It's ridiculous, okay? So, run the reel forward to 2021, and what happens in Afghanistan? Oh, it's a major oops. Do you think for a second Putin and Xi and them didn't really think that, oh my God, this guy is giving us the store? And that's exactly what Putin thought. So deterrence 101 just got thrown down the road again. Down the tube, rather. Okay? So here he's talking about how important it is and how his predecessor goes out and says, oh, let Putin take everything he wants. But the context of that quote was Trump was trying to do something with these so-called NATO allies who don't want to pay their fair share, which he had to deal with while he was president. And guess what? it's so frustrating to hear Biden talk about things like that, taking it out of context, when the reality is NATO only started paying their fair share. Not all of them are paying their fair share. Germany especially is getting there slowly. But at least Trump addressed the damn problem, which had always been there. And so, in Trump's worldview, hey, if NATO can't take care of their own backyard, why the hell should we? Now, I think that is a talking point to get NATO off its butt. I don't think Trump in any way believes that he's going to give Putin a green light. Okay. Having said all of that, where are we with this daggum business? Because, you know, Biden's out there quoting Reagan, take down this wall. And then he juxtaposes that against Trump's let him take it all. I mean, that's a lot of crap. And we need to understand that. And these people will stop at nothing when it comes to this. All right. So, I mean, if you think I'm unhappy with that speech, I guess you're right. I mean, Lori, do you really think that what Biden did was a State of the Union speech? Well, I'll just answer it for Lori. No, Lou, you know, it wasn't. He didn't mention anything about the border other than to chide the Republicans to sign that stupid bill that they killed the other day, 2 weeks ago, because they had to kill it because letting 5,000 people in every day is not border security, okay? He didn't talk about inflation except to call it about shrinkflation, because you can't talk about inflation because there's too much of it when you go to the grocery store, when you go to the pump. So how can he touch any of that? So my feeling is it was a speech designed for one thing, two things. One, to show that he could actually give a speech, and two, deal with problems associated with rallying his base, which is disintegrating, because the far left progressives, AOC and all of them, are mad at him over the Hamas issue, and you've got divisions within the black community, within the Hispanic community. He's hemorrhaging support there. Supposedly Trump has 28% black support from 8% in 2020, and Hispanics are over 40%. So with Biden's coalition falling apart, you bet he's got to rally the far left. Is it going to be sufficient? Well, we'll see. Okay? All right. Enough of that. I'm going to ask you to really think carefully about this next thing, okay? Because I do think that Katie Britt did an outstanding job. She answered the mail. She hit a home run in many respects. And I think that it surprised those of us who did not want Katie Britt. But I have to say that last night she did a good job. So enough of that. Enough of the speech. Let's move on to the border. Okay, the border just keeps on giving, really. Right? The argument I'm going to make here is that in the end, the only thing that is stopping Biden and what they're doing on the border is Texas Governor Abbott. I mentioned this last week because what Abbott did was able to pass a law, SB4. Okay? It's not supposed to go into effect on the 10th of March, and what it allows is that Texas law enforcement can deport anyone that they've caught who's illegal. All right? Now, as soon as this went out, I mentioned last week, there's a district judge in North Texas that put a stay on it. Then the appeals court got involved with it, and they basically did was put a stay on the district court, which meant that the law could go into effect. Okay? So the DOG, and this is new, okay? The DOG sued Texas, went to the Supreme Court. And what you end up getting, I think on Monday, was a note from the Supreme Court that puts an administrative hold on the Texas law until they meet on the 10th of March, if I'm not mistaken. Okay? Okay. So, where does this all go, though? Because most of the cases associated with border control have to deal with the feds in charge, okay? I mean, that's a no-brainer in a lot of ways. But guess what? Texas's Attorney General, Paxton, makes this point, and it's going to be interesting to see how the Supreme Court digests this. Paxton's point is the feds are not doing the job. We're doing the job. Okay? Now, run the reel back just a few weeks ago. The same situation came up with Texas putting in all the wire to keep all these bad guys out. And I say bad guys because they are bad guys. They're breaking the damn law. Okay? So, Texas has taken the steps. Now, the Supreme Court a few weeks ago said that the Border Patrol can cut the Texas wire. Notice how that hasn't happened. So something's going on there that is important, okay? Because if the Border Patrol really wanted to cut that wire, they'd be out there doing it. They would be just shoving it in the face of Texas. We're in charge. We're doing it. That ain't happening. Okay? So let's look at this next case. What if the Supreme Court says, and it's kind of hard not to agree with Paxton on this one. You know what? The feds are not doing their job. They're not following the law. And you say, well, Lou, what law is that? Well, go back to what I said last week about Mayorkas breaking the damn law, you know, catch and release, using parole, misusing parole, letting criminals in, passing them on, and you get the Lakin-Riley case as a prime example. So it's entirely possible that the Supreme Court may very well have its head fastened on right and will see exactly what Paxton is saying. And they will defer to Texas to save the... okay, Laurie.
Watch it.
Okay, I know. You've got the button there. You're ready to do it. But maybe, just maybe, the Supreme Court will realize that in order to defend the country and the border, Texas is actually doing it. And they will give them temporary jurisdiction until the feds get their act together. Of course, they won't get their act together because they don't want it. And you know what? Here's something that we just found out, and this is the whole question of why the border keeps on giving. We found out last week that the feds were flying 320,000 illegals into the United States of America, and nobody friggin' knew about it. Now, we did know that they were flying people from after they had crossed the border making these midnight flights. Okay, we knew about that. We didn't know that they were flying people in from outside the country into the country. This, to me, is going to blow up. If next week the House does not blow this up, shame on them. You all need to write to your new House member. Well, okay, I don't want to get onto that. I've still got 3 minutes to go or so. So here's the thing. These 320,000 flights are going to blow this up even worse. And my feeling is because they're doing something like that is totally illegal, will the Supreme Court recognize that and basically give Texas the right to defend the border? That's the question you're going to see next week, okay? All right, so here we go in the last minutes, okay? Let's argue. Well, Super Tuesday, we all know the fact that Super Tuesday happened and Haley dropped out. Trump is now, let's see, he's got 1,002 delegates. Haley Barbour's got 91, not Haley Barbour, Nikki Haley. And then DeSantis has 9. So, for all practical purposes, Trump is going to be the nominee. We'll see what happens in terms of who's going to be his vice president. There, and I think I mentioned this last week, there are people in Baldwin County who have told me that Katie Britt is on the short list for vice president. Well, she certainly helped herself that speech last night. There's no question about that. So we'll see where that goes. Let me wrap this up real quick. This whole question about what happened with Barry Moore and Jerry Carl. My feeling is that Barry Moore was in the Freedom Caucus. He was someone that I know the common sense people in Baldwin County and some in Mobile County were in favor of. The Freedom Caucus was where we are. And unfortunately, Jerry Carl had a different about that in terms of reaching out the other side of the aisle. And my feeling is that did not work. It's not going to work. We just need to beat these Democrats, not talk to them. That's where it is. That's my feeling about that. Okay. Your local school board. This race with Carrie Hoser, unfortunate she didn't win because in the end, we have got to have people on the school board who are willing to force the accountability issue And that's not going to happen unless Andrea Lindsay decides that she needs to get on the right side of these issues. We'll see how that plays out. So, Miss Laurie, I am now 31 minutes and 50 seconds into it. Thank you so much for your time, for everyone who's listening, and thank you, Laurie, for giving me that extra 2 minutes that I do not deserve what you gave me.
Well,
thank you.
Dr. Lou, we appreciate you pinch hitting on the program, and we welcome you back until further notice. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Laurie. Take care.
You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review here on WABF. This program is a paid-for program by an anonymous sponsor. The views and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this radio station or management. We will post this program on our website if you were unable to listen to it in its entirety or if you'd like to tell a friend. And we will now resume regular programming. WABF.